All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It is the Tornado Tony Benito.
And Psychic Tom Pageant. Crystal ball raring to go.
Yes, sir. And we had a week off last week, so we didn't get a lot in talk about the... Had a big UFC Fight Night 109 over in Sweden, and because of the time difference, I did not even get to see this one yet. I downloaded the whole event, but I have not watched it, so we're going to have to rely on Tom's color commentary on that one.
But, just a beautiful demonstration of the correct range of the uppercut, because, as we know, you don't want to use the uppercut from a distance. And the way Gus timed it, just as Glover was coming in, he would throw the uppercut from a distance, but it wound up being an in-close punch. I don't think I'd ever seen it employed quite that well, except maybe what Anthony Johnson did, but that was over so quick. This one went on for quite a while, but it was just absolute. Jab and uppercut were the two punches that did it. Incredible performance.
Yes, sir. We've also got a little bit of a feud going back and forth between Dana White and Golden Boy himself, Oscar De La Hoya. That's getting pretty interesting, and I'd like to play a little clip on that one so we can get rid of that window anyway. It's Dana White.
Dana White and a feud with somebody, I don't believe it.
Yeah, right? Here we go.
TMZ. Yeah.
Is it going to work? No, TMZ is not going to work for us. Damn it! It is. Sometimes the online stuff don't like to play for us. I'm gonna just try this. One second. Nope, still nothing. Oh well. Anyway, TMZ has a little clip if you want to watch it. TMZ Sports. Basically, Oscar De La Hoya said that it would be an embarrassment for boxing, and calls it a circus, Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. But at the same time, White actually pointed out that De La Hoya had said at one time he'd love to have Conor McGregor with Golden Boy. So... it kind of
a little bit
hypocritical.
Sour grapes, Tom.
A little bit hypocritical there, so.
Yeah.
I don't know what De La Hoya's response is going to be, but, they still haven't even made this fight. They haven't got an agreement from Mayweather yet. So, I thought it was interesting that now Manny Pacquiao is before, but now he is physically... putting himself out there saying that he will fight McGregor if Mayweather doesn't. So it's kind of funny.
All right, the question is on this now. How much more do you think Floyd is going to demand percentage wise? I think that's the question. Say if McGregor gets $75 million, does Floyd hold firm for $100 million?
$50 million.
$150 million. Okay.
He's got to make double.
$150 million. But where could he make? The question was brought up online. Where else could he make $75 million against anyone else but Conor McGregor at this stage?
I don't know. It's a good question. But I don't even know how he makes it here. But he'll figure out a way, I'm sure. Anyway. Lots of stuff to cover tonight. Chuck Liddell coming back to MMA, supposedly. He keeps hinting week after week. First it was a video of him and Jay Glazer, the NFL guy, and does a lot of UFC stuff for Fox as well. Chuck was pounding on him with elbows that sent him reeling despite just hitting the pads. And then a week later, Liddell posted a photo of himself with sculpted abs and his trademark mohawk. And basically just fueling speculation that he's coming back. But he himself says that, you know, it has to be stupid money. This is an interesting piece for a lot of reasons.
Well, I believe he lost his gig with the new owners of the UFC, didn't he?
Right. And he's going to mention that in here, but let me get to the first part here. So, he says, John Hackelman is the real person throwing gas on the flames, his trainer. Hackelman said that he didn't see why not. He would come back for $3 million. Pretty much, it's going to be a definite. But I don't know if that's the figure that he's been received. But Liddell's laughed about the whole Hackelman thing because he got in shape just to film this television commercial, not to prepare for a return to the cage, says Chuck. But Hackelman was happy to just get everybody riled up. He says, let me tell you about Hackelman, Liddell says. The first time we ever had a big television network come out to cover one of our fights, it was CNBC. It was a big deal to be on a show like that because the UFC was first becoming mainstream. They talked to Hackelman first, and they came to me all excited. He said, you got so scared before a fight that you have to crawl into bed and cuddle with him the night before, they asked. And they were serious. He made them believe it. I just started laughing. Hackelman is nuts. My favorite kind of nuts. He loves to mess with people. But anyway, someone said Anderson Silva and GSP would be a $12 million fight, Liddell said. I told people that for $12 million, I'd fight them both right now at the same time. People took that as a, he's going to fight again. It was a joke, but if you came up with $12 million, yeah, of course, I will fight again. I got a puncher's chance against anybody. But, this is some comments about his what was supposed to be a lifetime job at the UFC. He says, I went to a lot of places, especially new markets. If it was a place that wasn't really real familiar with the UFC, I was one of the names they knew. Here's an example. We were trying to get on one of the Air Force bases for a show to benefit the troops, and we were having trouble getting on there. I went out there and met the troops with the base commander the first day I was there. The second day... Oh, man, I just missed that. All the way back. All right. Second day, he told me, I had no idea who you were when you came, but after I saw how all my guys reacted to you, now I get it. 3 months later, we fought on that base. That's the kind of thing I was doing, trying to help the brand grow. Then, of course, WME IMG bought the promotion for $4 billion last year and got rid of a lot of the senior management staff, including Liddell. And this is kind of funny. It shows you how much Dana White was out of the fucking loop. Chuck says, when I heard rumors they were selling the company, I asked Dana about it, and he said, don't worry, you'll be fine. You've got nothing to worry about. And he said, I was cut on the third round of cuts. It was disappointing, really disappointing for sure. He says, I was told it was a lifetime job. Dana called me personally and told me the morning before they announced it. I understand it's business. They paid a lot for the UFC. They need to make some of that money back. They didn't think I could help them with that, I guess. So, and it talks a little bit about Bellator here. Quentin Jackson, Tito Ortiz have competed over there. Chuck says this. He says, I saw Royce Gracie and Ken Shamrock fight last year, and I said, I haven't sparred in 6 months and haven't fought in 7 years. I could get up off the couch and beat both of those guys right now. It was terrible. I would be embarrassed to fight those guys. So, don't look for him in a Bellator cage anytime soon. He finally says, it's a risk-reward thing. Someone would have to make it worth fighting. If someone came to me with crazy numbers, I can't say I wouldn't do it, but I don't see anybody coming up with those numbers. So, probably not going to happen. And Dana White has repeatedly said, you know, yeah, it was time for Chuck to be done, and he has no regrets asking him to retire and all that. So, speaking of being asked to retire, Miguel Cotto has had some people asking him to retire. He just split with Rock Nation, so he's no longer with the Jay-Z promotional company, but he just signed a new contract already with Golden Boy, of course. Big competitor in the marketplace. It's with a guy named Yoshihiro Kamagai. It will be the first of a multi-fight agreement. And They met at the news conference in Los Angeles to kick off the promotion of their vacant junior middleweight world title fight that will take place August 26th in the main event of an HBO World Championship Boxing telecast in Carson, California. And, so Cotto says that his second bout will be December 2nd, opponent to be determined, if all goes well, against Kamagai, who is 27-3-2 with 24 knockouts, 34 years old, of Japan. So I think that'll be a good fit. Oh, we'll keep an eye out on that. Speaking of Bellator signings, one of Tony's favorite MMA fighters, if he has any, signed with Bellator. Big Roy Nelson. I guess now he can go back to be his...
Nelson.
Gotta be... He's probably gonna be going back to his Burger King sponsorship. Not that he can. In the Bellator cage. But, yeah, he's had some rough goes about it in the heavyweight division in the UFC, so... I'm sure that Bellator will be a much better fit for him. But this follows Ryan Bader and Phil Davis. Benson Henderson as well went over there. Matt Mitrione, Rory McDonald just got his first win. And now Big Country, Roy Nelson, has a multi-fight contract.
Yeah, and I think Bellator's heavyweight division's always been kind of thin. So he may have some good hunting there.
And he was batting 500 in the octagon. 9-9 was his final record as a member of the UFC. But he obviously butted heads with Dana White repeatedly. A little bit for the weight issues and a little bit for the contract issues and matchmaking, all that stuff. If he had a bone to pick, he would tell you. And, you know, he didn't really have much of a corner most of his fights. I think Dan Hardy was his main corner man for a couple of them, and it seemed like, you know, Dan Hardy didn't have much experience doing it when he did. So,
well, you have to wonder where Roy trained at.
Yeah,
because I think he's from Las Vegas, and I can't believe he couldn't find a home.
Well, I know he boxed. He did boxing training with Jeff Mayweather, because I've seen enough clips of him doing stuff with him.
And then it showed him working the kung fu, what do they call that thing, the wooden dummy?
Yeah.
Yeah, showed him working that in his garage. He said he was a kung fu guy. I never showed him any kung fu-like moves. But it's just strange that he, because, you know, at one time he was close to being a top five guy. And I'm surprised he just didn't have a home MMA base out there.
Now, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with the person who wrote this article, but they put that he is currently 22-4 as a mixed martial artist in one paragraph. And then the very next paragraph, they said Nelson would go on to lose 5 of what become his last 7 fights with the UFC's heavyweight division.
Oh, where's the editor? Where's the editor?
So if you're 22-5...
The standards of the English language.
22-4, how can you lose 5 of your last 7 fights? I don't know. It's tough.
The decline of journalism in contemporary America.
Oh, talk about decline. This is good for both MMA and boxing. We've got some sucker punches to talk about this week. Sucker punches. There was one in boxing, probably the more vicious one, for sure. It was better footage of it, for damn sure. But it was Andre Durrell's fight there. Trainer Leon, oops, what happened there? I lost it. Andre Durrell's trainer come up with the sucker punch of the year, pretty much.
And the worst thing is, he sucker punched the guy bare-fisted. The guy wasn't even looking, and he still couldn't drop him.
Yeah.
What does that say, huh?
Leon Lawson Jr., all right, he's our bad boy of boxing for the week. He's suspended now indefinitely from being involved in any WBA-sanctioned bouts. And he took on super middleweight contender Jose Uz Kataguiri last Saturday night. I believe there was a disqualification. Andre Durrell was awarded the win. And I don't know whether it was low blows or what happened, but bad stuff. And basically... saying here, Uzcategui hit Durrell with a three-punch combination, the final punch landing while the bell was still ringing to end the round. So there's your disqualification. Durrell was unable to continue, so Bill Clancy, the referee, made a controversial call, ruling it an intentional foul and disqualifying Uzcategui rather than calling it unintentional and sending the fights to the scorecards, well, the fight to the scorecards for a technical decision. And then Uzcategui would have won by majority decision. So overall, it was a good result for Durrell. I mean, he got the win. And then minutes after the fight, after they'd shaken hands and everything, and Uzcategui apologized, Durrell accepted. Lawson, the trainer and uncle, went to Uzcategui's corner, and with the fighter standing awaiting the official decision to be announced, he sucker-punched him in an ugly scene. It was actually three punches, but only one really landed. Bare fist, left hand, hit him right in the face, and Uzcategui was restrained, and Lawson was pulled away, but then Lawson actually slipped out of the arena and disappeared, so he hasn't even been caught yet. They haven't even put the cuffs on this guy.
Yeah, I assume there's a warrant out for him, I would assume.
Gotta be.
They were looking for him, and they were definitely going to, press charges. He was going to be arrested for assault, and... You know, so far nothing's happened that I know. I know he was on the run, as they would say.
All right, Tony, here's a bit of trivia. This happened once on Friday Night Fights. Do you remember who did the punching?
Yes, I do. It was the James Butler, the Harlem Hammer, against Richard Grant.
That's it.
That's wow.
And what made it worse was that was only a few months after 9/11, and it was in New York, basically as a tribute card for the firefighters, police officers, and first responders from 9/11.
And I think Bob Papa was still the color commentator, and he had a meltdown, if I remember right.
Yeah.
He was married. That punk! Like, whoa, Bob. Okay, yeah, they're going to handle it. Yeah, Grant just outboxed him.
Yeah.
And, wow.
And the other sucker punch comes from MMA, the women's division. Although there could be a little asterisk next to women's for one of them. I shouldn't even say I know, I'm going to get punched next. but it was Cyborg, Chris Cyborg. And she was at the UFC retreat, and she did not retreat when it came to confronting Angela Magana. She just came right up to her and confronted her about some of the stuff that Angela has been saying on social media. And it's mostly about her looks and, you know, the steroid issues and stuff like that. She's basically just been talking a lot of trash. So, you know, Magana was in a group of people, and basically Cyborg came right up, you know, gave her some shit, got in her face, and then punched her right in the lip. And, of course, Magana milked it for everything. Apparently there was a citation issued against Cyborg. She was not arrested, but she was summoned to court for pressing charges and all that. But freaking Magana goes to the hospital and everything. She puts pictures out on Instagram and just made a big deal about it. And rather than apologizing for her insensitive comments on Twitter and all these other social sites, she just basically doubled down on it. And that led Brandon Vera to throw her out of Alliance MMA, where she trains. And he issued a public statement, which kind of sounds funny, because he's, in one breath, he's saying, well, I don't want to be a bully, but yeah, I'm going to be a bully right now. So he's basically saying that he no longer wants himself or his gym to be affiliated with Magana. And he came right out on social media to say, I was going to leave this alone, but this trifling cunt is still at it. You know, if you want to know what the tone of this is going to be, it's right there. Trifling cunt. So he adds that she kind of embodies what's wrong with the world today. Super entitled, whines and cries about everything, Instagram ass famous, and no other skills whatsoever. Pretty worthless. Bitch, you got your card pulled for the cyberbullying someone you thought you'd never run into. Super drama queen, do me a favor and keep your ass away from my Alliance MMA. Oh boy, he's a poet. He's a poet.
You know, it doesn't make sense though. They're not even in the same weight division.
I know.
I mean, if you're trying to get a fight, aka old Shannon Briggs, our buddy. I mean, if you're trying, well, you could kind of see some logic behind it, but they're in a couple different weight divisions.
Right.
Doesn't make sense.
But it's basically, it's not really a weight thing or whether they're going to fight or not or they're trying to set up a fight. It's just, you know, she's trying to make a name for herself out there. She was wrapped up in that whole nude photo thing on Instagram and all that. And so Angela Magana, she's a drama queen. So she's gone out there and her life is like a reality show, or so she thinks. So she's trying to show everybody what's going on, and she just basically threw a bunch of shots at Cyborg, you know, through social media. So Cyborg got pissed about it and went after her. I don't even think she was going to punch her. I think she was just going to talk to her, but as soon as she saw she wasn't going to get apologies, she's like, well, I might as well throw a punch. Anyway, Brandon Vera went on to say, I super feel like a bully for posting this, but she's a prime example of the world gone to shit. Crybaby ass, the only positive thing about it is she isn't a guy. Fuck, there's plenty of them as well. And he also said, there's a reason why no one is standing up for you, not your homegirls, training partners, even fighters at the summit. You deserved it. Also, your hospital picks are shit for a case since you went to a Snoop Dogg concert that very same evening. So, if she's going to do a civil suit, she's not going to be doing the pain and suffering part of it too well if somebody points that out. You were at a concert. But, yeah. So, that's another issue that the UFC is dealing with. Another thing that came out about the Fighter Summit is a lot of the people were pretty pissed off about the way they were treated, the way they were talked to. One guy from Anheuser-Busch actually came up on stage with a beer. Everybody thought he was drunk. So that was kind of disrespectful. But then they had people like Kobe Bryant and Michael Strahan talking to these guys. And Kat Zingano had an article out this week on the 27th there. Talking about the athlete retreat, saying that I don't think they considered our positions. But basically, she thinks it was all bait and switch. You know, they got these people in there that have millions of dollars, and they're trying to tell people how to invest $5,000. You know, they even had speaking of Snoop Dogg, they even had the free concert by Snoop Dogg. So, Kat said, I could see the effort, right? The effort in trying to get us to bond. In one way, it was super awkward getting everybody to be in one place at the same time. The one thing I worried about was the content of the seminar. It was hard to watch because I was like, do these people believe what they're saying and they just don't know? Or are they aware and it's a show? I want to say that every single one of us, at least, I don't know how many times that weekend, were looking at each other, rolling our eyes. But all of us in the fear that we don't even get to do anything about this. Part of me felt like there was a highlight video being created, Ultimate Fighter style, where they're saying the stuff they're saying on stage, and then they edit us in, laughing and smiling. So, yeah. And talk about Michael Strahan. Kobe Bryant talked about investing money, and was also Strahan. Reebok talking to some folks, and a Budweiser representative gave what they called a pep talk of sorts, even though he basically said, if you lose, you suck, and we don't want you, according to some of the comments. Only three UFC champions were actually at the summit: Amanda Nunes, Demetrius Johnson, and Tyron Woodley. And one of the complaints that came out of the weekend was there was a feeling of disconnect between the fighter reality and the one being presented to them. But Kat says they were a little insulted by that. She added, if this retreat was meant to tell us about all the newness that is happening, not only the millions of dollars that they probably spent on this event and the carpets at the event that will be used once and the wall fixture that will be used once and how much money went into bringing Snoop in and Michael Strahan in and Kobe Bryant. What did these guys get paid to come do this? When we're sitting here broke or struggling, or the people that are still on top in the world are wondering what they're going to do next in their career. It was really hard for me personally seeing how they're throwing out all these companies, making all this money, and we should be honored to be considered on the same level of popularity of these companies. She says that was more insulting than anything, and I don't know if they considered that when they were creating the content, when they were like, look, we get this many viewers, we sell this many fights to this many homes a year, blah, 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 and all of us are still sitting there knowing exactly what we get fucking paid. How much is Kobe getting to be there? And I love the man, don't get me wrong, I love Michael Strahan. Michael Strahan is actually one of the producers that did my documentary, Religion of Sports, so I have an invested emotion in actually liking this guy because he was delicate with my situation and my story. I do care about these guys, but it's like, how much did it cost to get them there? How much did it cost for Snoop to be there for a private concert? And every carpet in this hotel saying, fight or retreat, why not spread that money out over us or get us health insurance? We're getting welcome to a family, this professional athlete family, a world family. Kobe's telling us how to invest our money. Tell me, how do I invest and intelligently get a return on fucking $5,000? Tom, tell her.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they were getting more positions. But she actually predicted the future because she did see the highlight video that they made, and she said, it's exactly what I told everyone it would be. I said, look, they're getting us all drunk, they're feeding us, and they're taking video and taking pictures of us all laughing and having a great time and enjoying ourselves, and they're taking footage of the seminars, and they're going to edit it all together and make it look like that's why we were laughing and that's why we were smiling and we're so happy and so satisfied. If I can put it on a personal note, I'm trying to negotiate a fight right now, and I realize the things I'm saying directly affect the decision with how I'm going to be treated. And I know everybody is thinking the way I'm thinking. And then there's the Anheuser-Busch guy, showed up with a bottle of beer. She said, there was a guy on stage being extremely condescending to us, and I thought that was product placement. I thought it was. And no, he's out there representing us, promoting ourselves and our brand, telling us if we lose, we aren't shit, and they don't care about us, and to be ourselves. That was the best quote of the whole seminar, was be yourself, be Conor McGregor. I was like, done. But they gave us, this is the funny part, it's funny but not funny. They gave us these boxes, she said, these UFC boxes, which had shoes and sweatpants or something in it. On the bottom of the box, it had this coupon, and I pick up the coupon when I get home. Someone had said while we were there, dude, fuck all of this. How are they sitting here educating us about Reebok when Reebok is already taking all of our money? Everybody's upset about it, that we lost so much money, lost any credit with any sponsors whatsoever. So I get home and I find that thing on the bottom of the box, and I was like, so this is really what I've worked this hard for. This is me. I've made it. I'm one of the best in the world at something. I fucking made it. And this is what I get from the company that took all my money, is they want more. It's a coupon for Reebok at the bottom of the box. But I also realize, like I said, we're all scared. We're all kept in this place where we have to be controlled. We're being controlled, and we have to control ourselves if we want to continue to be successful in our position where we're at. So I don't want to get on there and say, fuck Reebok. I get to get on there and let Reebok fuck itself. So, yeah. How ironic is that?
I wonder, was this thing a mandatory fighters thing, or...
For most people, it seems like it was, but I guess they let
it
other
was,
people...
show up here or you lose your contract?
I guess they let other people slide, but...
Yeah, because she's acting like she was forced to go there at gunpoint or something. I mean, I'd have to think, well, maybe you didn't have to go.
Right. I don't know. I'd have to look into that if it's mandatory. But talking about the retreat here, this is Dana White's reaction to the Magani situation. He said, this is the real world. Now, when you're in the octagon, almost anything goes. When you're in a fucking fighter retreat, nothing goes. You can't put your hands on another human being outside of the octagon. It's assault. You will get arrested. In the fight world, we all love to get caught up in the, hey, you know what, she had a big mouth and she needed a smack in the mouth thing, but it doesn't work that way in real life. So Cyborg has been cited for misdemeanor battery by a Las Vegas Metropolitan Police, and she's waiting for officials to decide whether to pursue the charge. Basically, if you were to, she said, talked about assault is assault. Even that night with Daly and Josh Koscheck, the fight was over, the bell rang, and he went up and punched him right in the face after the bell. White said, that's assault. I don't think there was any charges filed on that one, but he says, if you're Cyborg, you go up and let her know how you feel. White said, you said all this mean shit about me, here's what I feel about you. But what, you walk away or you just stay away for the whole retreat? I'm not trying to be Mr. I take the high road, because I never fucking take the high road, but assault isn't. You can't go and assault somebody. You can't do it. Ugh. But he also adds, cyberbullying is everywhere. I don't care what kind of star you are, male or female, whatever it is a place where freaks who can hide behind, most of them are on private, they can have the kind of stuff, private accounts, which I don't think is right. Instagram should change that. If you're private, you should only get messages from people that follow you. It's ridiculous. But yeah, speaking from the biggest cyber bully of all, Dana White. But yeah, the fighter retreat thing, it's interesting stuff, because there was another guy that made some waves. He actually spoke out about the Reebok deal and kind of made some progress. They actually said that we'd like to meet with some of the guys and discuss this on a regular basis and try to keep you guys happy. So that deal is obviously not going to last forever with Reebok too, so maybe they'll end up changing that if they actually start listening to these fighters. But otherwise, you're going to see more people like Roy Nelson just say, all right, I'm waiting for my contract to end, and then I'm going to Bellator. So, it is what it is. But yeah, it's definitely a situation where a lot of these fighters, before, they just wouldn't say anything, you know, and whether that was out of fear because of the Fertitta's background or because of just the way it was run, I don't know, but maybe it was also because, you know, it was such a small management team that if you had a problem, you could go to somebody and you could work it out pretty quickly. But nowadays, it's like the whole corporate structure is pissing a lot of people off because, you know, they just don't feel wanted. They don't feel appreciated, and they don't feel like anybody's listening to them at all. And it's sad story from boxing here. I did not know George Groves, in his last fight, fought Edward Gutnecht in November of last year, and he won the fight, but Gutnecht is actually still in a coma, or he was put in a coma, but he's now still paralyzed.
Oh, wow.
Judges went unanimously for Groves. It was 12 rounds, but took a turn for the worse when Gutnecht collapsed in his dressing room and was non-responsive for a little while. They took him to the hospital. I believe they put him in a, I'll tell you in a second, in a forced coma.
Like a coma?
Yeah. He was put into a medically induced coma. Rushed into the hospital for swelling on the brain. And, Groves refused to talk about the fight afterwards out of respect for his opponent, but Gutnecht's team retained hope of a full recovery. Eddie has his dream of boxing against George Groves and again to reach for the world champion crown, said a statement from his camp. Now he has to wake up and have a full recovery so he can be there for his family again. I believe he actually already did wake up. This thing is all spaced out. He was sedated for 2 days after surgery. And then even as doctors attempted to wake him up, he remained in a coma for a total of 6 weeks after the fight.
Wow.
His wife did an interview last month revealing that the father of three is not able to walk or speak, and doctors believe he will be reliant on care for the rest of his life. So, no rematch. He is only able to communicate by... Right. He's only able to communicate by nodding, and the family are having to adapt their home to his disability. It's already a miracle he has survived, the wife told World Boxing News. The right hemisphere is almost completely damaged, and he suffered several strokes again and again in the whole brain. Yikes. And, you know, we just talked about the... We wish him all the best, by the way, and hope he does recover. But switching gears here, we just talked about the athlete retreat, and, of course, kind of ties into the union issue. And one thing that we haven't heard a lot about is the George St. Pierre and Bjorn Rebney creation called the World... Or the Mixed Martial Arts Athletes Association. And TJ Dillashaw recently came out to talk about that. He says on the MMA Hour, they asked him about it. He said, I haven't heard much from it either, so really I just tend to stay out of it. I don't know if I was led down the wrong path or what. That first day when they came out with the press conference, it was George St. Pierre, Cain Velasquez, Donald Cerrone, Tim Kennedy, and Bjorn Rebney. And the only one talking on that list is Kennedy, who's now retired. The only ones that have made comments about... He's the only one that's made comments about it and kind of tried to further the mission. But everybody else has been pretty silent. Dillashaw was joined on that inaugural day. Well, he was there too, I guess. So, but he seems more concerned on what's in front of him than the bigger picture. He says, I'm just kind of keeping my nose to the ground, getting my belt back, and worried about that, really. You know, I have no idea what's going on. I was told there was something bigger and more into it, but I haven't heard anything about it, so I can't really tell you much about it. So there's a guy that's actually in the inner circle. He don't know. I don't know what's going on. Wild stuff. I don't know if we got to talk about this on the last show or if it happened yet, but that little 12-year-old girl called Momo over there in Japan won her debut against a girl twice her age. The amateur mixed martial arts fight, that was another story, came through. Got her in a rear naked choke, choked her right out. So, it's another one. Then we've got Kell Brook beating got beat by Errol Spence last week in his home country in the UK. Actually, there's a little bit of controversy. He took a knee rather than, go out on his shield, as they say. He took a knee and called it quits himself. And he hadn't really taken any, huge punches right before that, but it was just enough of collaborative damage to get him to quit. He's that type of fighter. I mean, I only saw clips of it. I didn't really watch the whole thing. But he's just that type of fighter, Kel, is that it's more offense than defense 9 times out of 10. And it's just he has a very awkward style of defense where he's leaving his at least one side of his face open almost all the time. So, he did not look well in that battle against Errol. Errol did not seem very proud of himself either in the post-fight interview. He just was not really... thrilled with the whole thing, but he got the win, and he improves to 22-0. Kell goes to 36-2, and Errol keeps the IBF World Welterweight title. And speaking of George Groves, he also got another win over Fedor Chudinov. He improves to 26-3. Chudinov 14-2 now. That one was for the vacant WBA Super World Super Middleweight title. Super World. What is a Super World anyway? Is that like the world and some? The world and the space station? Is that the super world?
I think it's the Earth and the Moon.
Oh, super world. Okay. Also on that card, Lenroy Thomas, heavyweight, Bruce 21-4 over David Allen, who fell to 11-3-1. That one was for the vacant Commonwealth heavyweight title. Split decision win for Lenroy. And then this week, we got lots of stuff. Let me just see what we got.
Big fight. Before we do that, I just want to give a quick, recap of the Errol Spence Kell Brook fight. Talking to a friend of mine at the Lake Fitness that we go to, former boxer, knows his stuff. So he and I, we always have a lot of boxing discussions back and forth, and. Going into the fight, we were both going with Spence. I liked him, young guy, a lot of talent, good puncher. A few months ago when I was at the Lock Haven Boxing Show, the one coach that was there is also a professional referee, and he refereed one of Spence's fights last year, just about a year ago. And I asked him, I said, you know, Johnny, you were in there refereeing a fight against a guy who had never been knocked down before, and Spence knocked him pretty much out. I mean, out cold, out of the ring. And he said, man, this kid's the truth. You know, no pun intended, of course. He goes, you know, this kid's really a talented rising star. So talking to my friend Chris, you know, we're going back and forth, and he said, Tom, what do you think? And I said, I like Spence. And I said, I like Spence late in the fight. And we were going back and forth, and he goes, well, why do you say that? He goes, I like Spence, but he goes, I want to see how he reacts to the environment, how he reacts, because he's going to get hit. How does he do when he gets hit and gets tested? And he passed. You know, he took a few shots, but he passed. I said, I'm going with Spence in this fight. I said, on my stoppage, because, you know, no matter what, Blunt took a beating in his last fight against Triple G. You know, you don't reverse a beating like that. That's what he took. And Chris goes, yeah, but, you know, he goes, it shouldn't psychologically affect him because he was an underdog. He wasn't expected to win. I said, right, it might not psychologically affect him that, you know, he wasn't expected to win and, you know, so he lost the fight. But the fact of the matter is, it's going to psychologically affect him because he got beat up. You know, it's going to physically affect him, kind of like what happened to Meldrick Taylor after the first Chavez fight. But it's going to psychologically affect him as well because he got punished, you know, to the fact that they had to rescue him because his legs were gone. He was taking a beating. He was getting beat up real bad. That's like a sixth grader fighting, you know, a tenth grader. And nobody expects a sixth grader to win. And maybe he lands a punch or two. But the fact of the matter is, a tenth grader pulverizes him. You know, they stop it. He gets beat up physically real bad. And then it's like his next fight, you know, even though he's fighting another sixth grader, again, a real good sixth grader, you know, physically and mentally, he's not the same.
Yeah, the body's just not meant to take that kind of beating.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was a pretty decent fight overall, but Gell's just losing a step, I think, with each fight that he deals with that kind of adversity and takes that kind of punishment. So
I'll tell you, when I talked to Chris on Tuesday, and we're, you know, talking about the fight, he's impressed with Spence, you know, because Spence proved to him what he had to do. He thinks Spence not just wins, but knocks out Keith Thurman.
Nice.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that. And I think Sean Porter's going to be odd man out there, too. Boy, that division's tough. Oof.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. So, tomorrow night over in Paris, France, we got some fights to talk about. Bantamweight in the main event. 11-0 Nordine Ubali. He's fighting for the vacant WBC silver bantamweight title against Alejandro Hernandez, who comes in at 31-12-2. Co-main event there is welterweight Ahmed El Moussaoui, who is 25-3-1, fighting Roman Seliverstov, who is 16-10-1. And here's a good one. This guy, heavyweight Tony Yoka, fighting in his heavyweight pro debut, fighting a guy named Travis Clark, who is 12-0. Is that a mismatch or what?
Wow.
12-0.
That's weird.
In your debut. That never happens. Usually it's
well, what is amateur? I wonder if he has a real amateur pedigree or something. Why is Brain Trust would put him in there?
Or Travis Clark has fought a bunch of nobodies. I don't know. But yeah, 12-0. That's usually 0-12 is the situation there. All right, wait a second. I thought that was... There's another guy fighting in Italy who's got almost the same last name as the main event guy there. Mohamed Obadi, 12-0, fighting Sammy Reyes over in Lombardia, Italy. Reyes is 20, got 20 wins, 14 losses, 1 draw. That's for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Flyweight title. And that's a big one this weekend is Stevenson versus Fonfara. But there's a card tomorrow night at the 2300 Arena, and your boy Hank Lundy is the main event.
I'm in the second row.
27-6-1. He's coming in at lightweight. Yeah. He's got 3 losses in his last 6 fights. He's fighting Daniel Evangelista Jr., who has 20 wins, 7 losses, and 2 draws.
Substitute. The original opponent had to pull out. I'm going. My dad's going, and my trainee Matt. It's going to be Matt's first professional card, and I've got second row seats. And I sent you guys a picture earlier of one of the former fighters that's going to be there in attendance, Michael Grant.
Oh, nice. Was that your buddy, the other radio show host with him?
The guy that does the TV show?
Yeah.
The old guy, Hank Cisco. Yeah, he used to be one of Grant's backers. Grant's up from Atlanta, so they're going to the card.
So you're going to miss my brother in Louisiana tomorrow night because Gary Bergeron is fighting Jamichael Wade. Gary Bergeron comes in at 12-15. Jamichael Wade, 2-1-1. And no, it's not. He's not really related. But there used to be a Bergeron in the heavyweight division, but not anymore. I don't see much about him. Forget what his first name was. Anyway, we got a big female fight over in Argentina, super lightweight, Ana Laura Estesh. She is 12-4-3, fighting Adela Celeste del Carmen Peralta, who is 8-1. That's for the IBF, WBO, and WBA World Female Super Lightweight titles, all 3 of them. It's the main event there. And we got a pretty decent card in Victoria, Australia on Saturday. Jade Mitchell in the main event. He is 13-1, fighting Istvan Zeller, who is 37-15. That's for the interim WBA Oceania super middleweight title. And we got a couple guys who are undefeated at 12-0. Andrew Maloney, 12-0, fighting Aramis Solis, who is 16-4 for the WBA Oceania bantamweight title. And then we got Jason Maloney. I guess these guys must be brothers. One of them is a bantamweight, the other one's a super bantamweight, and they're both 12-0. Jason, 12-0, going in against Emmanuel Armendariz, who is 12-2-2. That one's for the WBA Oceania super bantamweight title. So both fighting, both of them are going to have titles, Oceania titles. They both got the same last name and both the same record. They're going to get their 13th win and a title if they win, both win at the same time. All right, so big fight, as I mentioned, is a Showtime card tomorrow night in Quebec. Adonna Stevenson coming in at 28-1 at light heavyweight, fighting Andrew Fonfara, who is 29-4, who is the WBC World Light Heavyweight title is on the line there. Then we've got Elider Alvarez at light heavyweight, who's undefeated, 22-0, fighting Jean Pascal, who is 31-4-1. And this one's for the WBC Silver light heavyweight title. So you got the regular and the silver.
And I got
same card.
I got questions about both of these fights. Stevenson and Fonfara. That fight happened a couple of years ago. Season 1, it was a recap. It clearly won. Fonfara goes to get knocked out by Joe Smith. And Joe Smith turns that around and beats the legendary Bernard Hopkins. But Fonfara's getting the title shot? Doesn't make sense to me. Why is Joe Smith not getting the title shot? Now, I know Joe Smith does have a big fight coming up, and I apologize that I'm forgetting who it is off the top of my head. It's a big name fighter. I have to pull out one of the magazines, pull up BoxRec to find it. But I'm just curious to find out why Joe Smith is not getting this shot. And then the other fight, Jean Pascal. I mean, he's taken some beatings in the last few years, so kind of curious to see how much he has left.
And we got another fight, welterweight too. Custio Clayton, 11-0, fighting Oscar Cortez, who's 26-2. That one's for the vacant WBC Continental Americas welterweight title and the vacant IBF International welterweight title. So, Yeah, that should be a good card overall. Let's see what we got. More fights on Saturday. And we got some fights over in Russia. Cruiserweights, Dmitry Kudryashov, 20-1 is his record, fighting Olen Ruwaju Duradola, who is 25-3. That one was for the WBC Silver Cruiserweight title. Yeah, nothing too great on the rest of the card there. Oh, this is a crazy one. Over in Thailand, minimum weights, Chiafan Munsri, he is 46-0. Fighting
wow.
Omari Kimweri, who is 16-3 for the WBC World Minimum Weight title. And it's the only fight on the whole card. So you better come for that one, because there's nothing else. This is guy has got the best name for boxing with the worst record over in the UK fighting this weekend. He's fighting welterweight, Stuart Burt. He comes in at 8-0-1 fighting guy William Warburton. His record is 23 wins, 114 losses, and 9 draws.
9 draws. 9 draws.
Yeah.
Which has got the 9 draws.
And that's not even the craziest name on this fight card. There's one guy who's fighting a guy in his pro debut at welterweight. This guy's name is Matthew Ashmole. Ashmole instead of Ashhole. His record is 132-1, and his only win was his last fight. So he's coming in on a positive note.
So he's one win, 32 defeats, and 1 draw.
Right.
I just love these draws.
And then we got some stuff over in my corner of the country, in Connecticut, Foxwoods Resort on Saturday. Our former guest, Shelito's Way, Shelly Vincent. She is 19-1, going in against Jerry Sitzes, who is 15-10-1, and hopefully she sitzes her butt on the canvas, and Shelly will be happy. We also have lightweight Matt Remillard, 24-1. On the comeback trail against Fatio Fassinu, who is 27-5-3. And this is a Lou DiBella Entertainment card there. Still on Saturday. There's one from Osaka, Japan. On Sunday, featherweights Hiroshi Osawa, 30 wins, 4 losses, 4 draws, fighting Julio Cortez, who's undefeated at 13-0. No title or anything on the line there. And I'm pretty sure we're getting into next week's stuff. So that's it for this week's big schedule. Lots of fights to watch. And Tom, did you get a chance to watch The Ultimate Fighter last night?
Yes.
Good stuff.
And he just couldn't seem to get it going on the feet. Even his ground game, I mean, I didn't think he was going to get choked out. It's hard to choke him out, but and I have no problem with him getting a second shot at it. Boy, Cody was all upset about that, but I think the wild card was fine. Have no problem with that at all.
Right.
Well, I don't know if you've seen the show, if you know what I'm talking about. Did you see the show?
I did. And
okay.
I thought it was pretty pretty impressive that he took so many punches and kept walking forward and didn't even seem woozy, Joe Daddy. But, it was a lot of punishment to take. And then to have a 6-day turnaround, I mean, that's bad enough for weight cutting, because you bumped up a little bit in weight after you had the weigh-in and everything like that, and then 6 days later you got to get back down to weight the day before, so it's really 5 days to cut the weight again, and then you got to fight, and you had that bad of a performance. I don't see it.
Name recognition, and in fact this is it. I mean, he does it here, and that's pretty much it for him, all these guys,
right?
So
But I mean, I think they picked that fight for a reason. And Joe just had no reach on the guy, and he just couldn't land anything. The one or two times he did land a takedown, he couldn't do anything with it because, you know, yeah. Justin Edwards was just so wiry. But another thing I noticed about Edwards was that he's just very good at pacing himself and, you know, mixing stuff together, like the strikes and everything like that. He threw a lot of nice kicks, and, you know, he hit him with a spinning wheel kick at one point and just looked really crisp, putting a lot of stuff together. So, good stuff there.
Yeah, just a very ugly fight for Joe. And I thought once he got it to the ground that things could change around for him a bit. But gotta give Edwards a lot of credit.
Right. I'm just looking at Gary Bergeron's record here on BoxRec. Let's change the subject here. He's actually fought some pretty decent guys. Maurice Hooker, fought him. 2014, lost by TKO. He's got a bunch of straight losses.
What a great name for a boxer. Maurice Hooker.
Yeah. He was supposed to fight on this weekend.
What his favorite punch is.
Probably a straight right hand.
Yeah. Uppercut. He's got a good jab. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't have... His wins are definitely against people that needed a win, I guess you could say. One guy he beat was 9-24. That's the last guy he beat back in 2010. The guy before that was 10-50. Wow. 10-42. Man. Crazy records. Anyway.
You know, Rich, how about an idea for a book about boxing's greatest losers? Or along those lines, because those would be some fascinating human interest stories.
Yeah.
As to why you would want to be in such a dangerous, punishing vocation when you're not that good at it. I mean, there's no shame in not being that good at it, but why in the world would you want to, with the skill level that it sounds like these guys are at, their lives are on the line in there.
Yeah.
I mean, just review that George Grove story that we were talking about.
Exactly.
This is not a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Not a joke at all. And you just really wonder what in the world keeps these guys going. But I wouldn't think they could be making that much money.
Don't know. But yeah, it could be a good story. I do believe there was a documentary years ago called The Opponent or Opponents or something like that. It was all about those guys. But I don't know how far they went or who they talked to. Anyway. Big UFC main event last week was Alexander Gustafsson versus Glover Teixeira, and it went all the way to the fifth round, but just a minute and 7 seconds in, Gustafsson got the knockout with punches. And like I said, I did not witness this one myself, but I will be watching it at some point. I downloaded the whole event anyway, so I gotta watch it. But
Glover really showed all the heart and toughness in the world. I didn't have him winning a round. I mean, he was just running into it. He just didn't seem to have an answer. And Gus would do a little bit of that kind of like a rapid, almost a running retreat, and then get resettled again. Bisping was very upset about that. But, hey, it worked for him.
Then we had Volkan Ozdemir beating Mircea Cercunov by knockout, just 28 seconds.
What surprise that was. Whoa.
So
That really fooled me. I mean, I was so high on that Mircea. That was... all it takes is one punch. You've got cement in your hands. One punch can do it.
And Peter Sabata also got a TKO, punches and knee. Over Ben Saunders. That was in the second round, 2 minutes and 29 seconds into that one.
Yeah, Peter just looked so good. I thought his edge would be on the ground, but Ben Saunders being a lanky southpaw, it's a hard fight, but Sabata hadn't read that part of the script. He looked great.
And Omari Akhmedov beat Abdul Razak Al-Hassan by split decision. Split decision. I'm reading unanimous from the next one. It was a unanimous split decision. Nordine Taleb also on the card, beating Oliver Enkamp. That was the unanimous decision win. We had a first round knockout TKO by Jack Hermanson over Alex Nicholson. That was 2 minutes into the first round. Pedro Munhos beat Damian Stasiak by unanimous decision. Also, Trevor Smith beat Chris Camozzi by unanimous decision. It's the first loss for Camozzi in a little while. Joaquim Silva beat Reza Madadi by split decision there. Bojan Velukovic beat Nicholas Musoki by knockout in the third round, 4 minutes and 37 seconds into that one. So he had 23 seconds left to go when he got taken out. First couple fights of the night, Darren Till beating Jessen Ayari by unanimous decision, and Damir Hadzevic knocking out Marcin Held. I believe he comes from Bellator territory, but it was a knee, knockout knee, in the third round, just 7 seconds into the round there.
It's a devastating loss for Held. You know, he had so much promise coming in, and I think he really got a bad decision. One of his losses, but that's three in a row. Not an auspicious beginning.
Right.
So I don't know where he's going.
The big fight this weekend is Jose Where's Waldo Aldo, 26-2, fighting Max Holloway, who is 17-3. That's not his real nickname, but Max has been kind of poking fun at the little Brazilian because he hasn't been out and about promoting this fight too well, I guess. But here it is. Holloway is actually coming into Aldo's backyard. Aldo has been on the fence for a while, or on the bench, I should say, out of action. But, you know, he's game as ever, and he looks pretty decent in training from what I've seen in the videos. But so does Max, and Max is on a tear. So I'm looking forward to this one. This is going to be a real
interesting. Yeah, I think that'll be a fascinating main event, but the rest of the card for pay-per-view is not really generating too much excitement.
So Dana White fucked that one up. But anyway, we got Claudia Gadella in the co-main event. She comes in at 14-2, fighting Carolina Kowalkiewicz, who is 10-1. And a couple names from Blast from the Past, longtime fighters here. Vitor Belfort, 25-13, fighting Nate Marquardt, 35-17-2. And Nate's just had some ups and downs lately, and Vitor is coming off his demolition from the hands of Kelvin Gastelum, who was apparently smoking too much before the fight. He got busted for the marijuana. Then we also have got Marlon Moraes on this card. He's 18-4-1, fighting Rafael Asensio, who is 24-5. I got Eric Silva as well on the card, 19-7, coming in against Yancy Medeiros, who is 13-4. Yuri Alcantara coming in at 34-7, fighting Brian Kelleher, who is 16-7. Eric Spicely, 10-1, fighting Antonio Carlos Jr., who is 7-2. We got Johnny Eduardo, who is 28-10, fighting Matthew Lopez, who's 9-1. Paulo Henrique Costa, 9-0, fighting Oluwole Bamgbos, who is 6-2. Lewin Chagas, 14-2, with one draw, fighting Jim Wallhead. That is a nice name for an MMA fighter. Wallhead. Jim is 29-10.
Well, I guess that's better than Forehead or Madhead. Yeah.
And we got another female fight way down on the bottom of the card. Viviana Pereira. She is 12-0, fighting Jamie Moyle, who is 4-1. And the first fight of the night is undefeated Davison Alcantara Figueiredo, who is 11-0, fighting Marco Beltran, who's 8-4. And I don't think there's much of a time difference with the Rio fights, the Brazil fights, so hopefully
one hour.
This one. 1 hour. It's a little bit off. And Tom sent me a little thing about the scoring, whether the scoring is going to be an issue in the rematch of Ward versus Kovalev 2. It's coming
up. Yeah, I saw that. I didn't get to read the article, but I saw what he said, that they had to have all U.S. judges by Ward's demand.
And Kathy had to agree with it because they did have that rematch clause, if you remember. But I guess Ward threw a hissy fit about it. So now, I'm not saying. I mean, there are three different judges, but they've got Dave Barretti from Las Vegas. He's one of them. Well, we'll see. That's just. I remember before George Foreman fought Ken Norton, there was some kind of dispute about the judges in that fight. Now, no one thought that was going to go the distance, but Foreman gave the greatest statement on judges I think I've ever heard. He said, "I don't care if three little old ladies judge this fight." And I never forgot that. And the fact that Ward is threw such a fit about that, I think they should have called his bluff. Go ahead and retire. Go ahead, quit. But I guess Kovalev's so confident that he's going to knock him out, he says, "Well, fine, let's go with these judges." So now the fight's kind of under that cloud again with this. Well, we'll see.
Well, Ward says, "I'm good. I know there are fans and media members who don't like or don't agree with the decision of the first fight, but that's not why I agreed to face Kovalev again. I have nothing more to prove to anyone, and it's not about the money. I'm fine. I agreed to fight him again for my fans and my supporters who have been rolling with me from the beginning. This is for them." So the rematch takes place in Vegas at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino June 17th, and it's going to be aired on HBO pay-per-view. And that's pretty much all I have for this broadcast. Let me just check the Google alerts here for everything. See if we got anything to jump in with. Nothing for wrestling. Nothing there. All right, let's check boxing. Adrian Broner's next fight's going to be against Mikey Garcia, July 29th at 140 pounds. Is it a nice
fight? Yeah, actually, I was going to bring that up a little bit ago. I was talking to my dad, and if, you know, we don't get to do this, you know, Alvarez-Golovkin fight, then we're just going to maybe go for plan B and hop a train up to the Barclays Center and catch this one on July 29th.
Mike Tyson weighing in on Mayweather versus McGregor says Mayweather would make McGregor look, quote, ridiculous. I'm not going to read that whole thing, but no surprise there. All right. Announces event at Daytona International Speedway. This is going to compete against Bellator now, who has already tried to do NASCAR stuff. Watching stock car drivers battle it out on the oval at Florida's Daytona International Speedway later this month, fans can stick around to watch mixed martial artists go head-to-head in the Decagon. The Professional Fighters League announced Thursday that it will host four bouts at Daytona International Speedway following the completion of the Coca-Cola Firecracker 250 NASCAR Xfinity Series race on June 30th. It's going to be a two-hour event televised live on NBC Sports Network. And it's the first of four such events that will be held this year before the Professional Fighters League regular season begins in January. And some interesting names. John Fitch and Brian Foster will square off in the five-round main event at Daytona, and the winner will be awarded the number one seed in the 170-pound welterweight division for the inaugural PFL season. The league, which will aim to compete against the UFC, Bellator, and other established MMA circuits, has a unique format. Fighters will receive a regular paycheck each month and be divided into seven weight classes. What? The top fighters during the regular season will advance to the playoffs, where the champions of each weight class will receive $1 million. An additional $3 million will be divided among the other fighters. Well, that's a very weird format. Undercard.
That's a lot more than the UFC.
Right? The undercard for Daytona includes a trio of three-round bouts, all of which will affect the first PFL regular season ranking. Smilino Rama and Ronnie Marks will square off in a 205-pound light heavyweight bout. Joao Zeferino and Herman Torrado will meet in a 170-pound welterweight bout, and Jason High will battle Carlos Fodor in a 155-pound lightweight bout. So admission is actually included with the Coca-Cola Firecracker 250 race ticket. this must be World Series of Fighting related, because league president is Ray Sifo.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't he the league president of World Series of Fighting?
Well, I think that's evolved into this new thing.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah.
So he says, the road to the first Professional Fighters League playoffs and postseason $1 million purse begins this January, but the winners in Daytona could have a little smoother start. Recruitment for 2018 continues at a stronger pace, and we're looking forward to welcoming more athletes into the Professional Fighters League in the coming weeks and months. So it's kind of like the NASCAR setup with the playoffs. You know, you get the playoffs set up and you fight for the trophy, but instead they're fighting for $1 million. Professional.
You know, their lightweight champ just signed with the UFC, and I'm wondering if they're paying that much money, why would you want to leave?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But anyway, it's founded by Russ Ramsey, this Professional Fighters League. He's an investment banker and head fund manager who chaired the DC 2024 Summer Olympic bid. Washington, D.C. Investors in the league include Monumental Sports and Entertainment CEO Ted Leonsis and members of the Lerner family who own the Washington Nationals. So, big sports people getting involved here. Everett Washington, Las Vegas, and Washington, D.C. are going to hold the next few events after Daytona. Details have yet to be announced. But they call it a first-of-its-kind partnership, the Professional Fighters League and NASCAR. But Bellator already did it, so I don't know why they would call it that. But it is bigger names than Bellator put out there. Charlotte Motor Speedway. Last month, it says Bellator MMA held those bouts, and more than 1,000 fans watched some or all of the bouts. Bellator's bouts in Charlotte were held before the race. They featured amateur fighters and were not televised. So this is going to be televised. So it's a little bit more of a first in that respect. Anyway, that's all I've got. Unless you guys got anything else to chip in with, we're going to call it a night.
Well, I am good to go.
All right.
All right, guys. We'll do it up next week.
For stopping
by. All right.